There's something very unique. I can't think of another festival that is both one of the world's most important film markets, which the Berlinale is. It's an A-list festival programming world premieres. It's also a major audience festival in a capital city. And those two things are equally important, and sometimes they're a little bit in tension with each other. But I know filmmakers and rights holders love bringing their films to the Berlinale because they also have that public audience feedback that you get.
Says Tricia Tuttle, the new director of Berlinale International Film Festival, who is currently in the midst of preparing her first edition and is taking a short moment in her office to meet with me online for this new episode of our Weltkunst podcast. Tricia Tuttle was born in the US but has been living in the UK since 1997, when she was working as London Film Festival's artistic director between 2018 and 22. Today, she is the director of Berlinale, one of the world's most important film festivals with more than 330,000 visitors and attending guests from all the different fields of the film industry. This year, from February 13th to February 23rd, we will be able to discover Tricia Tuttle's first edition of the festival. You grew up in North Carolina. Do you remember how cinema first came into your life as a kid? What role did cinema play in the late 70s or when you were really little, or in the early 80s when you became a teenager?
I don't ever remember a time when movies weren't absolutely central to my life. My dad was a massive movie fan. I wouldn't even call him a cinephile. He was just like an absolute movie nut. You know, he loved popular films. He loved John Wayne. He loved Paul Newman. He loved Bond films and Westerns. And they were always a part of my life. But I also, just as a kid, that's, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s and everyone went to the cinema. You know, the multiplex cinema experience was something that, well, I guess my first cinema that I really remember was called The Gem. And it was a cinema where you pay $1. It was in my grandmother's town. And I spent every summer with my grandmother and went to the movies. She would just basically drop us off and we'd watch whatever was on. Then later, a little while later, she'd drop us off at the mall and we would stay and watch the same film like over and over and over again. So I think I probably saw a film like Grease 14 times in a row, you know, just obsessed with it. But yes, and then because my dad loved films, he was a very early adopter of, he got home box office and Cinemax, which are home entertainment channels or platforms at cable television at that time. He had a VHS and we constantly rented films. And I think that was probably when I started renting films, was when I really started to get in touch with, you know, my own cinephilia and follow different paths, different curatorial paths, and usually through something like an actor, like, you know, love Goldie Hawn, so would obsessively watch all the films of Goldie Hawn, or, you know, it was following actors, I think, at first.
When you compare these days of cinema with the situation of cinema today, what is the biggest challenge and how can a festival like the Berlinale address that?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is getting young people to go back to the cinema regularly. There's a lot of competition for entertainment, but I really think one of the things that's turned out to be fatal for cinema culture is that we've converted all the independent cinemas into luxury screens that are expensive, and they're, you know, trying to appeal to an older, affluent adult audience, and the ticket prices are prohibitively expensive. And actually what gets people really hooked on the experience is the kind of thing that I did when I was a kid, which is it being cheap and accessible and fun, and you can go with your friends. And that is the kind of thing that builds a lifelong love of cinema going. So I feel really excited always about how we hook the next generation of young people, how we get people excited about that collective viewing experience, because it's such a pleasure. It really is. And there aren't that many things in culture right now that allow us to have those experiences together as a community. So I would love to think that festivals have a role to play in introducing young people to different kinds of cinema. And I feel really hopeful about it because I know in cities that have repertory cinemas that play archive and classic programming, that it's young people who are really going and packing out these cinemas. So I know there's an interest and I know there's an appetite, and we can really help tap into that.
imagine it's also a challenge that young people don't even watch movies that are really 2 or 3 hours long anymore. I mean, I have 3 sons and only one of them can even watch a movie like on TV with us. The other ones, it's a different kind of perception. Is that also a challenge?
It is a challenge, and I agree. And I think that's probably why getting people into a cinema where you have, it's easier to pay attention, there are no distractions, and you start to realize how many pleasures there are into experiencing culture in that way as well, and not just in bite-sized distracted chunks. But, you know, there's a lot to, I don't want to critique the media that young people do use because it's intelligent and smart, but it's a different kind of viewing experience as well when you go into an immersive space that asks you to sit still for a couple of hours and pay attention. I know my son is a massive movie fan as well too, and we were just talking about Parasite, the Bong Joon-ho film, which he rewatched again recently, and I was like, oh, do you like it? And he was like, yeah, I like it as long as I don't try to watch it on a laptop, because you have to sit and pay attention. And I think it's hard for people to do that. I have a hard time when I'm watching on a laptop, just not looking at my phone or doing something else as well.
You've been coming to Berlinale as a professional for many years. Now you live in Berlin. How do you experience the city and its cultural institutions?
I really love the city, and I'm living, my kids are in their last year of high school now, so I'm living between London and Berlin, and I've already started to get to know Berlin, but I'm mostly my first 10 months has been working, and evenings hanging out with people are really work related. So I'm going to look forward to starting to explore the cinemas and bars and restaurants a bit more in my year two when I'm more settled, but I love it. It's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous city.
Do you have some favorite spot already in the city?
Well, I do. I mean, I live on Corinna Straße, and I love that area of Mitte Prenzlauerberg. And there are lots of little bars and restaurants and coffee shops around there that I like to go to. Yeah, there's a Tabak, which is fantastic there, which I really adore.
Now back to the movie screening process. 8,000 submissions have been viewed by you and your team during the last months. That number is just incredible to me. Is there a certain zeitgeist, a temperature, or a thematic tendency in cinema these days which you would describe maybe as nowness?
That's a very good question. And I don't think there's one thing that I see. I mean, I guess one thing that's really exciting is all of the different voices that you see in cinema. I mean, I think this is true in European, North American, sort of Anglophone cinema, because there's been a lot of conscious investment in different perspectives and different voices. But I think, you know, that's always been the case of international cinema. But I love the range that we're seeing of not only perspectives and places, but also the cinematic language that people employ to tell the stories that they want to tell. That's, I feel like there's a lot of diversity. And if cinema exhibition culture isn't in the best shape it always was, cinema certainly is. I mean, I think there are some incredible films being made. So I think our task is to get people to see them and get hooked on them.
And how do you actually watch these new films? And at what state are the films at? I mean, some are very new. Are they all finished when you look at them?
No, not all. In fact, most are not finished. We see films which are in, you know, at their picture lock stage, maybe before the sound mix or before the final score. That happens a lot. We do see some finished films, of course, but I'd say 75% of the films we see before they've had their final sound mix, at least. I think that's exciting, too, because a sound mix can make so much difference to a film. So if you already love a film when you see it before those final elements have happened, and then you get to see it with an audience in a cinema, it can be quite like dazzling experience.
Do you have a habit or a routine during this screening process? How do you memorize the films you watch? Do you take notes? Do you take photos? What's your trick?
Well, that's a very good practice, and I try to do that. I have a little notebook, and I try to write either lines of dialogue or an impression, or sometimes I write the way that a film began, because the opening can be a really great way to help me sort of remember some of the themes and the aesthetic of the film. But the truth is, that's my good practice. And sometimes what I do is I get so busy that I don't take proper notes, or I take notes in the dark and they're all written over each other. So I can't read anything. But luckily, I watch the films at the Berlinale, at least. I watch films with there are seven of us usually who are viewing together. So when we talk about the film afterwards, and it helps really make sure that it's sort of imprinting in my mind as well too. And we also all try to write notes together so that we have a good record of them.
So the creating a film program is actually very similar to putting together an exhibition. How would you describe your curatorial line? What stories are you looking for, and what story do you want to tell yourself?
Well, I think there is definitely a similarity with curating an exhibition, but I'd say creating a sort of season, a film season, is more like an exhibition. When you're programming for a festival and you're programming new films, you're not programming to themes or ideas, and sometimes themes emerge and links between the films, of course they emerge, but I'm thinking the biggest curatorial line is it's actually about diversity usually, and it's about wanting the films that we choose to have a balance and be different expressions of the cinematic form, or we want an interesting male-female split, or different perspectives in many different ways and different textures of the program. So overall, we're not so much, the themes emerge later sometimes, and we go, oh yeah, this is the zeitgeist, this is a thematic preoccupation. And I guess of the program this year that we've come up with, few things we see is an interest in definitely human beings coming up against very difficult social and cultural and political forces and grappling with those, sometimes it affecting, you know, people's mental health. I think there's a lot in the program about people who are sort of struggling in the world that we're all living in. But one of the things that we didn't necessarily look for this, but filmmakers are delivering this, is even in, you know, the sort of confronting the realities of the world that we live in, which can be quite dark and quite difficult, a lot of filmmakers are deciding to have their characters turn towards hope in some way, or turn towards lightness. So I think filmmakers are really wanting to see through the other side of the moment that we're living in. And I really appreciate that. I don't mind going dark with a filmmaker, but I also, you know, it can be very satisfying right now when we're living in this world to see something that shows you the other side of the moment we're living in. And a good film, well, a film that I really think about, that I love all of the competition films, but Timestamp from Katerina Gornostai, the Ukrainian filmmaker, is really does this. It's about the war, and it's about the Ukrainian experience right now in the middle of the war, and about teachers who find a way somehow to keep the education system going. And they're such heroes and they're so amazing. But the way she structured the film is not around particular characters, but it's around distance from the front line. So you have like a school that's really close to the front line and a school that's 100 kilometers away, and it moves back and forth and shows the strategies that the teachers employ. And it's just so, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful way to structure a film about a people in wartime.
Ever since its foundation, Berlinale considers itself as an audience festival. What does that actually mean, and how will you continue to do justice to that DNA?
Absolutely, we're an audience festival. We had 325,000 public audience tickets sold last year to the festival, and that sort of blew my mind when I first came. I mean, I came from an audience festival, London Film Festival, also, you know, around 200,000 admissions to that festival, so it's a big capital city festival. But there's something very unique. I can't think of another festival that is both one of the world's most important film markets, which the Berlinale is. It's an A-list festival programming world premieres. It's also a major audience festival in a capital city. And those two things are equally important. And sometimes they're a little bit in tension with each other. But I know filmmakers and rights holders love bringing their films to the Berlinale because they also have that public audience feedback that you get. I think it's a rude awakening later because we have incredibly adventurous, cinephilic audiences. So, you know, I love it, Berlin. You see 1,000 people going to see, you know, a Hong Sang-soo film or a Simon Lang film. And it's people are really, really wanting to push themselves with the types of films that they see.
The selection for this year's competition shows a strong focus on newcomers, which is a very political choice. How have the first reactions been?
Well, the new section Perspectives has been really well received. I think, you know, everyone in a festival is interested in established filmmakers, but we also want, we go to festivals because we want to discover the next generation of filmmakers. And to put these films together in a 14-strong competition really creates a focal point that I've found that at least the film industry is really interested in. I think the press will be as well, too. We have been running a first feature competition for 19 years. This will be the 20th year that we've had the first feature competition. But what we've never done is pull them together into a spotlight competitive section. So what that does for me is it just creates more of an impact for the nominated films as well, in addition to the winner, because the winner has always had the profile, but now 14 films get the spotlight that they deserve.
The festival will be opened by Tom Tykwer's Light, a director who, together with his wife, Marie Steinmann, has been very involved in the art world himself. What did motivate you to choose Light as your opening film, and what is it about?
We saw Tom Tykwer's The Light, Das Licht, in the summer, and immediately, I mean, literally the next day, we called him and said we want to open the festival with the film because it's a Berlin story. You know, as Tom said, Berlin is his heart. And I think this is such a deeply personal film. And it's also a film that I think will resonate with audiences, not just Berlin audiences, but international audience. It's that thing that I spoke about previously, about having a film that's not afraid to look at the dark things in our world, but also choose to see lightness in them. It's in the name of the film, and that's what it is. And there's a lot of joy in that. I mean, I don't think we want saccharine. We don't want sweet. We want complexity to our joy. And there's a lot of complexity in the joy that this film provides. There's also an exuberance in the filmmaking. You know, there's no rule that Tom allows himself to be bound by in the way he approaches the storytelling. He uses songs, he uses movement. I mean, it's a really beautiful in terms of its filmmaking as well.
Two other highlights of the program will certainly be the new film of Richard Linklater, Blue Moon, and Bong Joon-ho's Mickey 17. How would you tease us these two?
So Mickey 17 is the first film that Bong Joon-ho has made since Parasite. So the world is very excited about it. And this is a film, it's very playful. It's wildly imaginative, as you would imagine from him. It's about all kinds of things. It's about the rise of authoritarianism in a very fun and cheeky and playful way. It's about science gone out of control. And Robert Pattinson plays multiple characters in the film. And I would say it's an incredible performance. I mean, I don't think anyone doubts that Rob Pattinson is a great actor, but after this, you know, I think he's going to really blow people away. Richard Linklater's Blue Moon is a really incredibly well-written chamber piece, which is from the same writer who did Me and Orson Welles. And again, this stars Ethan Hawke in the lead role as Lawrence Hart, one half of the first half of the Rodgers and Hart songwriting duo, who of course famously wrote Blue Moon. It's set on the night that that Rodgers has started his new partnership with Hammerstein, and they've just premiered Oklahoma. And it's Lawrence is sitting in a bar waiting for the team to come back from their triumphant premiere. And it's about, you know, a moment in people's lives where their fortunes change. It's beautiful. It's really funny. I think the writing is great. And of course, it's terrific performances from Ethan Hawke in the lead.
What is your advice on how to prepare for Berlinale and how to survive the marathon of 10 days of cinephilia in Berlin?
I think everyone needs to take snacks, take a bag of snacks so that you can make it through the film. I would say get your colored pens out and your spreadsheets out. I always love at a film festival, and I know there are audiences who do this at the Berlinale, where you see that people have sat down with the guide really carefully and like mapped out their schedule so they can see five films, or, you know, the maximum number that you can see in a day. And that's one of the great pleasures. But I'd say get your colored pens, get your snacks ready, look after yourself, talk to the person sitting next to you.
What is your biggest wish for the upcoming years of the festival?
My biggest wish for the upcoming years is nothing less than we make sure that Berlin is the center of the film universe for 10 or 12 days in February every year. And I really want the festival to be warm and inviting and inclusive. I want it to get people really excited about films. And I want to bring young people to cinema and make them want to see films for the rest of the year.
If time travel was real, what place and period would you visit?
So I think it's not a period I know exhaustively, but I think I'd be really interested in being in Berlin in the 1920s and 30s before the rise of National Socialism, and in this incredible cosmopolitan world of music and film and great cinema. I love many of the films from that period, and I'd love to be in the Berlin world of clubs and nightlife. That would be incredible.
What's your most important tool?
My most important tool is a pen, definitely. I like to scribble notes. It's the only way I can remember anything. So I carry a notebook and a pen around with me everywhere.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
I'd be a dog, because life is pretty uncomplicated as long as you have a good owner.
Which game do you like to play?
Oh, I've got a really great game called Azul, which is a strategy game, which I highly recommend if you haven't played it. It's like the most relaxing game where you sort of play against yourself in some ways.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Do you have a recurring dream?
I do. It's a really weird one about my teeth falling. I don't know what it means. But...
Do you listen to music while you work?
I don't listen to music while I work. I find that I love music, but I find music takes my whole brain, and I find it really distracting if I'm trying to do other things.
Can you share a wisdom?
Forgive yourself, be generous with yourself, learn from your mistakes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Tricia. This has been great. And I'm totally psyched to see some films at the Berlinale now.
Come up and wave and say hello.
Our podcast, Was macht die Kunst, is powered by Volkswagen Group Culture. Volkswagen Group Culture is also an educational partner of We Felt a Star Dying by Laure Prouveau, a project by the LAS Foundation at Kraftwerk Berlin, running from February 21st to May 4th.